Say that. Amanda Halstead is filling in for Jim Sparing, who couldn't be here today, and I'm happy to be chairing this planning committee and ABAG administrative committee meeting with my fellow chair, Mark Luce. So to begin, may we confirm the quorums?
We have a quorum.
We have two, yes. And then next on the calendar is the compensation announcement. May we hear that?
Good morning. In accordance with state law, I am making the following announcement. Each member of the board here today will be entitled to receive $100 per meeting attended, up to a maximum $500 per month per agency. This amount is provided as a result of convening a meeting for which each member is entitled to collect such amount. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So next on our agenda is the consent calendar. Is there a motion on the consent calendar?
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any opposition? Hearing none, I assume that has been approved. And then mainly on our calendar is Plan Bay Area. And I think we'll turn to Ashley and Ken for the presentation on that.
Good morning, Commissioners. Ashley Nguyen with MTC's Planning Section. As Chair Halstead mentioned, I'm joined by Ken Kirk of ABAG, as well as Tina Thomas of the Thomas Law Group. We're here today to present you with some scoping input that we received over the past 2 to 3 weeks, as well as to present to you our proposed alternatives for evaluation in the CIR. As you know, MTC and ABAG are co-lead agencies in the preparation of a programmatic EIR for the Plan Bay Area. The purpose of this EIR is to identify the plan's significant impacts on the environment, as well as determine how the plan can avoid or substantially mitigate significant impacts. We are also required to evaluate a range of reasonable alternatives to this plan. In terms of the scope of the CIR, it is a programmatic document, meaning that we are presenting region-wide assessments of the proposed plan and alternatives. The key benefit of this programmatic EIR is that it provides CEQA streamlining opportunities, as called out in Senate Bill 375. This allows not only our transportation partners, but as well as local agencies and others to tier off of our programmatic document. The areas that are most tierable are the growth-inducing impacts, as well as the cumulative impacts for transportation, air quality, and climate change. CEQA does require that we evaluate a reasonable range of alternatives. The purpose of evaluating the range of alternatives is really to identify alternatives to the project that can feasibly attain most of the basic objectives of the project, but avoid or substantially lessen any significant impacts of the project. The alternatives themselves are really governed by the rule of reason, meaning that we only have to look at alternatives that would indeed just avoid or substantially lessen any of the significant impacts of the project. We do not need to consider all conceivable alternatives. In thinking about the feasibility alternatives, there are a number of factors that we must take into account, including economic viability, general plan consistency, as well as other plan and regulatory limitations. As we think through the alternatives as they're presented today, there are also factors for eliminating alternatives, which include the failure for any one alternative to meet most of the basic objectives of the project, its infeasibility, and its inability to avoid significant environmental impacts. During late June and early July, MTC and ABAG hosted five public scoping meetings, and we received a wealth of comments during the scoping meetings, as well as hundreds of letters and emails over the past few weeks. There are four key themes that I wanted to touch on in terms of what we've heard through the scoping process. The first and foremost is that we heard significant concerns expressed by the public about the legitimacy, the impacts, and the influence of Plan Bay Area itself. The second is that the EIR analysis needs to assess the feasibility of some of the earlier vision-based land use forecast. So there's a little bit of skepticism about the forecast that we're using for this plan. And the third is that a wide range of alternatives should be analyzed, incorporating the feedback that we heard, particularly from the business, equity, and environmental groups. And the fourth is that CEQA streamlining will support the environment envisioned growth patterns proposed by this plan, and will be beneficial to local jurisdictions, but it really must be considered carefully. There was concerns about the SB 375 CEQA streamlining provisions providing a free pass to projects, which is certainly not the case. During the scoping process, MTC and ABAC staff engaged and reached out to our 3E communities, and this has been really helpful in terms of refining our thinking on the alternatives, as well as getting their direct input on crafting alternatives themselves. This was a good opportunity for us to respond to the business community's concerns about market dynamics that are needed to support the projected PDA growth that was assumed in the Jobs Housing Connection strategy. It also gave us an opportunity to respond directly about whether or not this plan was meeting the SB 375 mandates to provide sufficient housing for the region's population. It also gave us an opportunity to really delve into some level of detail with our equity stakeholders about their interest in providing affordable housing in job-rich communities, as well as ways to boost transit services in communities of concern. And lastly, it also helped us to respond to some of the environmental advocates' concern about roadway expansions as called out in the preferred transportation investment strategy. We are at a point in time where we are taking the fork in the road. As you know, over the past year and a half, we've been doing two rounds of scenario planning, which were largely based on a vision-based approach. And this vision-based approach involved a couple of steps. It first identified the desired land use outcomes first, and then we established some regional factors to distribute the housing and job growth, and we used some sketch planning analysis to determine the future land use development pattern. These land use development pattern numbers were vetted through the local jurisdictions, and we made some manual adjustments based on the local input. And then we went through a process of evaluating the land use and transportation impacts using our MTC travel model, as well as some additional sketch planning analysis. As we move it forward into this EIR, we are definitely taking the fork in the road and using an entirely different approach. We will be using a policy-based approach, wherein we will be very explicit about the land use and transportation policies that we will be testing that will help us to determine the land use development pattern. And we will also be using an integrated land use and travel model system to really help us assess the future land use development patterns and to lay it out, taking into account the interactions in the marketplace. And then lastly, we'll use the integrated modeling system to assess the land use and transportation outcomes and its impacts based on some of the things that we see in terms of the policy impacts that are made that reflect the land use distributions. We do have new tools at our disposal in developing the CIR. In general, the key benefits of using these new analytic tools, which would be our new urban CM economic land use model, as well as the MTC activity-based model, is that we start, again, with policies and projects as inputs into the model. We are able to then examine the potential consequences of those policies and projects on outcomes such as land use patterns, uses, densities, and intensities, as well as the travel outcomes. Taking this kind of more model-based approach or policy-based approach allows us to really do some interactive testing of how different policy levers achieve certain outcomes. And then I think the most important thing, particularly with regards to the SB 375 CEQA streamlining, is that some of the model outputs that we will have will allow us to actually assess in a much more rigorous way the growth-inducing impacts as well as the cumulative impacts of the plan itself. As I just mentioned, we have two new modeling systems available. The MTC travel model has been used over the past 2 years, and we use this model as part of the scenario assessment done to date. But the new tool is Urban Sim, and what we're intending to do here is to use these two models in an integrated fashion. What we'll do is use Urban Sim and the travel model much in the same way that the travel model actually already works, which is both models will be very explicit about the policies. Urban Sim looks at land use policies, while our travel model looks at transportation projects and policies. Both of them go through a simulation of relevant behaviors. On the Urban Sim side, we're looking at the behaviors of households, businesses, developers, and the government in terms of regulations. And then on the travel side, the household travel behaviors. Both models produce very detailed outcomes. And the cool thing about the integrated modeling system is they actually talk to each other. So we actually see interactions between land use and transportation, and we'll be able to assess those outcomes. So in constructing the alternatives, we will have both land use and transportation policies. This is a puzzle, if you will, of all the policy levers that would be tested as we construct and define alternatives. The first one is zoning, and under zoning, what we're looking to do here is to apply some upzoning policies, particularly in priority development areas and transit priority eligible areas as defined in SB 375. This allows us to direct growth in those areas that are well served by transit. We will also be looking at growth boundaries. There are many adopted growth boundaries in our region, and there's two different conditions by which we will look at growth boundaries. One is a trend condition, where we would assume that there is the growth boundaries are a little bit more permissive, and there's still some outward expansions beyond the growth boundaries. And there's more of a the second condition is a strict boundaries, where we actually would try to contain as much development inside the boundary than outside. We will be also applying fees in terms of a regional development fees to constrain development in areas that are highly inefficient so that we can indeed direct growth in those areas that we would like to see growth, particularly in areas that are, again, well served by transit. We will also look at subsidies. In some cases, some of the alternatives would require fairly substantial subsidies to support the level of growth envisioned, particularly since the marketplace may not support those levels of growth. And we also will be looking at incentives. There's three different incentives packages that we will be evaluating as part of the alternatives. The first one certainly will be the One Bay Area Grant, which rewards jurisdictions who provide housing. We will also look at the SB 375 CECA streamlining provisions, as well as a new legislation advanced by Senator Steinberg in terms of reinstituting redevelopment funds via tax increment financing through SB 1156, I believe. Those are the land use policies. And then on the transportation side, we will be looking at the roadway network. And we have two different roadway networks, actually three different roadway networks here. One is the preferred transportation investment strategy that the MTC and ABAG board approved back in May. There will be two modifications to the roadway network, one that looks at a reduced scope for the express lanes, and another one that looks at reducing highway capacity projects. We will also look at a transit network, and the transit network here will be the existing transit network as laid out in the preferred transportation investment strategy, but there will be also two modifications to the transit network. One is to look at instituting more transit effectiveness projects, particularly for the two operators, AC Transit and BART, and the other one is to boost transit services to support communities of concern. We will be looking at pricing as a way to manage travel demand. There's two options here. One is a higher peak period bridge tolls, and the other one is a VMT tax. And lastly, we will be exploring parking policies, looking at both minimum parking policies as well as parking pricing. So those are the transportation policy levers. So that this is the menu, if you will, in terms of the policies that we will be applying as we go through the different alternative definitions. So MTC and ABAG staff are presenting five proposed alternatives for your consideration today. This first one is the no project alternative. It is required by CEQA. CEQA requires that we analyze a no project for the purpose of comparing the impacts of approving the project versus the impacts of not approving the project. And the project in this case, as you know, is the jobs housing connection strategy. For the land use component of the no project, we start with the 2010 built land use conditions and assume the continuation of locally adopted general plans and zoning policies. On the transportation side, we would assume the existing 2010 transportation network plus all the fully funded committed projects with environmental clearance through May of 2011. This gives us a fairly conservative no project definition, but we feel like this is the right approach in terms of being able to really see the host of impacts in terms of a differentiation between the no project and the project alternative. The project alternative is the Jobs Housing Connection Strategy. And here, as you know, we are looking at a land use development pattern that directs about 80% of the new housing and 66% of the new jobs into priority development areas. It is also married up with a preferred transportation investment strategy that directs close to 90% of all available funds towards maintaining and operating our existing transportation system. This preferred project or this project was approved by, again, the Commission and ABAG back in May. Note here that the Jobs Housing Connection Strategy was crafted based on a vision-based approach, and MTC and ABAG staff will be recreating this alternative using the integrated modeling system so that we understand the policy levers that would be needed to actually implement this strategy, as well as doing apples-to-apples comparisons to the other alternatives. This third alternative is titled the Transit Priority Focus. And here, as you know, SB 375 explicitly calls out transit priority projects, or TPPs for short, which are the types and locations of residential mixed-use projects that the state would like to see occur as part of our sustainable community strategy. So as such, this alternative applies policy levers that facilitate greater development in transit priority eligible areas and certainly less development intensity in PDAs in comparison to the Jobs Housing Connection Strategy. Upzoning of transportation priority project areas, as well as regional development fees in highly inefficient locations, as well as strict growth boundaries will be applied. We will also be looking at incentives such as the OBAG, the CECA streamlining, and the redevelopment funds to really, again, help direct growth into transit priority eligible areas. To support this more focused land use growth pattern, we will be modifying the preferred transportation investment strategy. This is the first where we will look at modification to the regional express lane network, focusing primarily on HOV lane conversions as well as gap closures versus more extensive widening. We will also be modifying the transit network, looking at ways to, again, infuse a little bit more transit effectiveness improvements, similar to what has been implemented by both Muni and Santa Clara VTA in their own transit effectiveness studies. We will be doing the same, but this time it will be directed at BART and AC Transit. We will test pricing as part of this transit priority focus. We will be looking at a higher peak period Bay Bridge toll to see what influence it has on travel demand, and we will look at reduced parking minimums. Last month, we shared this map with you. This is a comparison of transit priority eligible areas with PDAs. And again, as part of the transit priority focus alternative, our intention here is to direct more focused growth in areas that are marked in dark green and the fluorescent green. The areas that are marked in red, which are just PDAs that are not necessarily served well by transit, we would not try to put a high level growth in those areas. The fourth alternative is titled and informed by the input from the business community. It is modeled largely after the Jobs Housing Connection Strategy in that it relies on upzoning in priority development areas and assumes significant land use policies, particularly housing, particularly subsidies, to support the intense development in priority development areas. And it also includes the preferred transportation investment strategy. However, where it's different is it calls for a land use development pattern that is more in line with the current regional plans, projections 2011, produced by ABAG, which calls for pretty aggressive growth, primarily in the urban core, but also allows for some dispersed land use development. It also differs quite substantially from the other alternatives in that it has a higher number of households, housing units, and jobs, because it looks to provide housing opportunity for every Bay Area worker. And it also has a different interpretation of the OBAG incentive. Here in this case, we are conditioning the OBAG funding to those local jurisdictions that either eliminate or remove regulatory barriers to jobs and housing development. And this last one is titled and informed by the input from the equity community. It's called Environment, Equity, and Jobs Alternative. Overall, this alternative seeks to reduce displacement and maximize affordable housing in priority development areas, as well as high opportunity areas that are marked as being job-rich with good schools but lack affordable housing. It does direct growth to both priority development areas as well as transit priority eligible areas through upzoning and incentives, and as well as supportive policies through subsidies. It does look to modify the preferred transportation investment strategy by increasing transit services on the most productive routes for routes that are serving communities of concerns. And it's also trying to link those transit improvements between communities of concerns to job centers, and also looking at ways to eliminate some highway capacity projects. This one alternative is looking at doing pretty aggressive pricing. It has both the higher peak period Bay Bridge toll as well as a VMT tax to discourage driving. We are on a pretty tight schedule in terms of moving forward with the development of the EIR. You saw this schedule last week, but our intention here is to present to you the five alternatives today for your review and consideration. We will be looking for your for you to take action to refer the five alternatives to the Joint Commission and ABAG Executive Board for final approval on July 19th. This will allow us to proceed in the development of the draft EIR, and we hope to release a draft EIR for public review in mid-December and then take its course in terms of going through the public hearing and review process through the early parts of 2013. And we're still at this point in time slated to have the Commission adopt a draft plan and certifying this final EIR in spring of 2013. With that, I'll close and be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. You've been hard at work trying to integrate all the people's concerns, and I very much appreciate the great work you've done. Commission questions before proceeding? Do we have...
I did have one question or comment, and it has to do, again, with we call these alternatives, and yet at least the last two have a lot of assumptions that haven't been tested with local policy, and it's a whole slew of issues that, once said and done, I don't know that you could say it is an alternative that you could pick and go with at the end of the day. It may be an alternative that highlights some differences in the project that might identify some areas that there might be some room for improvement, but I don't know that you could call it any of these other than the ones that are already based in existing land use policy realistic alternatives. And how do you respond to that?
I think your commentary is really directed at feasibility. And I think this is a point in time where you can take a look at the five alternatives, particularly the last two, as you referenced, and determine which elements of those alternatives you might call into question in terms of its feasibility in advancing. This is an opportunity to do so. If you choose to call into question, we could certainly discuss those elements today. If you would like for us to proceed with the evaluation and revisit it as we go through the draft plan process, you can do that as well.
Well, I think my concern is that you're using a model that's just going to put zoning in locations that have never been discussed, because a model decides that economically is the best opportunity to put a high rise in the middle of Napa Valley or something, for instance. And that's just because it's a model. And so I understand that. And then when it shows us traffic, it might show all the economic incentives of doing that, but then it's just simply not realistic. And so I think that's okay, given all the policies that we're evaluating, that it's reasonable to just take a run at it and see what we see. But my expectation is that when we're done, that you really won't be able to just go with alternative five. It hasn't been tested on ground truth in terms of a lot of issues that would need to be looked at before we would be able to do that. And I'm not saying I oppose that. I'm just saying let's acknowledge it up front that these aren't going to be alternatives we're just going to be able to run with, if we just should see some advantage in one or the other.
Director, if I could just add a point, Steve Heminger, MTC Executive Director. The reason we made this graphic with these little puzzle pieces is you're not just faced with a choice between alternative four and three. you can mix and match, and I think that's one of the valuable things that we'll learn over the next several months is there may be parts of Alternative 5, as an example, that you think are no way, no how, but there may be other parts that you think, why, we should have thought of that. Well, let's consider that in the final package. So I think that's probably a better way of describing what's coming up rather than all or nothing on individual options.
Commissioners, can I suggest we go to public comment and then come back to the commission?
Yeah, and my comment was actually going to be similar to Steve's. My sense is that we can mix and match these individual components. And so the legal question is, even though the analysis is on each of these alternatives individually, the analysis will be sufficient enough so that if we do pull out elements and mix them, the legal analysis of the EIR and its alternative in the EIR will be sufficient for that, correct? I just want to make sure.
Tina Thomas, yeah. Thomas Law Group. You can pick and choose amongst the options. We're going to do sufficient environmental analysis so that you can do that.
Right.
And then if you pick a hybrid, so to speak,
right,
we will stop and pause and go back and make sure that the EIR covers
right
all of those points, and then we'll prepare findings accordingly.
Got it. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. We have, I think, five people who filled out speaker cards, and so I think we should proceed to that and then come back to the commission for further comment if that is acceptable. So we'll begin the public hearing. Linda Best of the Contra Costa Council, please.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. We are a member of the Bay Area Business Coalition, and I believe you've received a letter from us, and as well as the alternative that we're proposing. And in saying that, I want to thank the staff for really reaching out to us and giving us the opportunity to present some suggestions and alternatives that we think need to be studied in the EIR. And so we do urge you to include in the EIR assessment the alternative four that we have provided. And we think this is important for a couple of reasons. First of all, it will accommodate 100% of the housing needed in the region in the time period that we're talking about, and is required by SB 375. Secondly, its GHG performance is high, and that is shown in the 2011 analysis that you have all received and seen previously. And that's also then enhanced by directing the new housing units to the PDAs, which we think is an important component here. And also, while being aggressive with smart growth goals, it also, we believe, is more realistic and more likely to be feasible in the final analysis. And from the Contra Costa Council's perspective, we think it's a much more geographically balanced approach. And it encourages decentralized nodes of job growth, which would address the jobs housing imbalances, and in so doing, will certainly reduce vehicle miles traveled and greenhouse gas emissions. So we encourage you to adopt or as an alternative to be studied, the alternative four. And lastly, we want to stress the real importance of doing a very robust PDA analysis in the next several months, so that when you get to the point of adopting a final plan, you really know what's going to work, and you'll end up with a plan that can actually be successful. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Campos with the Building Industry Association. I really don't have anything to add to Linda's remarks. I second all of them, but do want to also single out the staff for praise for reaching out not only to the business community but to the other stakeholders in developing a wide range of EIR alternatives, and reiterate our support again for including alternative number four. So thank you very much.
Manolo Gonzalez Estai, please. Thank you of Transform.
Good morning, Commissioners. Manolo Gonzalez Estai, Transportation Policy Director for Transform. Wanted to also commend staff for having given us opportunities to meet with them and offer our input. Yes, Alternative 5, we were able to give a lot of input, and I really appreciate Mr. Heminger's comments that there's a reason why they're puzzle pieces. You can move them around, and I think looking at it as just one or the other is not correct, and I think we need to be able to see we'll get at the final outcome is going to be a composition of all these things, and it's an opportunity to share some of these things. In regards to public participation in the scoping process, it was unfortunate that 4 of the 5 public scoping meetings were held during the middle of the day, during the middle of the week, when most of the public has to work. Several people came to me and said, should I take time off of work to go to these meetings? And I said, don't take time off right now. Just continue working, and I'll try to put comments in. And so I think, yes, we have opportunities to do written comments and others, but it was unfortunate that they were not able to participate in that process. I hope that as we move forward, we take that into consideration of the public process as we move forward. I also have copies of our letter that we submitted to Ashley, but if others on the board would like copies of that, we'd be happy to share that. We look forward to continuing the process and continuing to participate in this. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Catherine Lyons of the Bay Area Council.
Good morning, and thank you. I also want to, Catherine Lyons of the Bay Area Council, also wanted to reiterate my fellow business coalition members, Paul Campos and Linda Best's comments, so I won't go into repeating them, but just a couple of other quick points. You know, the Bay Area Council is looking forward to continue working with MTC and ABAG on potentially and hopefully increasing CEQA streamlining opportunities, and also just identifying and reducing impediments to this kind of development to make sure that this plan can be fully realized and implemented. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And again, thank you for including the business community in this. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for your participation. Rob Means.
Rob Means. I live in Milpitas. I work with the Advanced Transit Association. And my understanding is that really the objective with this plan is to try to reduce our CO2 emissions. And I just question whether this plan that you're working right now is really going to reduce our CO2 emissions by 19% 8 years from now and by 55% within 25 years. I'm suspect that we're following the path that the San Diego Regional Planning Departments did and come up with an RTP that is not going to accomplish our GHG reduction objectives. As you're probably aware, SANDAG is being sued not only by environmental groups, but by the Attorney General of the State of California because it didn't meet the GHG objectives. I'm afraid we're going down that same path. We're going to be stuck with the same kind of legal issues. Let me suggest that when you look at the transit portion, that piece that we're talking about trying to get people to use more and more, that you consider automated transit networks, that you consider advanced transportation options, such as personal rapid transit. I think that we have spent money, for example, on the extension of BART down through Milpitas and into San Jose, that's costing us $2 billion for 10 miles of transit, 20 if you count it bidirectional. For that same amount of money, instead of 10 or 20 bidirectional miles, you can get 100 to 200 miles worth of personal rapid transit. We need to start considering alternative transportation options. That may be the way that we can really succeed in reducing our GHG emissions that we want to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Parisa Fatehi.
Good morning, Parisa Fatehi, Weeks of Public Advocates, and a member of the Six Winds Network. In light of the fact that the scoping comment letter deadline was just seems like hours ago on Wednesday, I wanted to just highlight a few of the points that you'll see in our letter. One, that the draft EIR should really take care to analyze the distribution of the environmental impacts to ensure that they are fairly distributed across all segments of the population. Second, we wanted to make the point that please ensure that the models, the tools that you're using for analysis in the EIR are really sensitive to the differences not only in behavior but in policy impacts on vulnerable communities. In particular, it's widely accepted that low-income residents have lower vehicle ownership rates and lower vehicle miles traveled. So affordable housing provision actually has lower VMT impacts than market rate housing. So things like that, we'd really like to work with staff to make sure that the tools take into consideration. Finally, we thank staff as well for working with us to include the equity environment and jobs alternative as one of the EIR alternatives to be studied, and really look forward to continue to sit down with them and partner with them, because as many things in this process, the devil is in the details, and as the models are fine-tuned and calibrated, we'd like to be a part of that process. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to add to the public comment? Seeing none, thank you. We'll close the public comment and proceed to commissioner comment. Mr. Liccardo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was intrigued by the transit priority focus alternative number 3, and I just had a couple questions about the options that were chosen in terms of the specific policies. I'm trying to understand why we would scale back regional express lanes if our goal in that alternative would be an enhancement and an improvement of whatever environmental impact we're trying to mitigate, and a more focused growth pattern. Why wouldn't we want to expand or enhance the hot lanes?
I think here, just to clarify, the reduced scope in the express lane, the regional express lane network is largely intact because it does include both the HOV lane conversions as well as all the gap closures. The windings that we are omitting from consideration as part of this modified network are just the ones that are on 580 and towards the 80 corridor, just the tail fringes. So the hole is there. I think we were trying to do that in response to comments that we heard from the environmental community about really having such a robust network and really trying to limit capacity enhancements. And so we were trying to stay in touch with that comment. I think overall, I think this modification, while it does look at winding limitations, I think it still has the feasibility and viability of the regional express lane network as a whole, because the main elements of the network is still there.
So is what you're saying then that there are portions on the outer parts of our proposed regional express lanes network where we would be adding lanes, and that expansion would then be taken out in this option? Is that right?
That's right. The segments that we are omitting will be just the ones at the tail end of I-580 as well as the tail end of I-80.
Okay. Thank you. And then further down in that paragraph refers to the COA, and recognizing San Francisco and VTA already undertaken this process, I'm trying to understand why, with the implementation of a comprehensive operations analysis, we would anticipate this enormous expenditure or shifting of dollars, where I don't think we've seen that in the past with other implementations of COAs in other counties. So what makes this different?
Commissioner, I'm not sure that it does have to involve enormous amounts of money. I will say that in the case of BART, and this is usually the case with BART, it's going to cost more because it involves some pretty significant capital improvement and changes in how they operate the system. But with AC Transit, just as was the case with VTA, which I think has the most advanced implementation of its operation analysis, it was largely a reallocation of resources. So the work we've done with BART and AC is in a much more preliminary state than the work that VTA and Muni have already accomplished. So I think we're going to take care to work with them and figure out how far we push that envelope. But the basic idea is just to apply the same thinking to the two major East Bay systems as has been applied to the two major peninsula systems.
Okay. I mean, my experience with COA down VTA, and I'm assuming this is similar with Muni, was we spent six figures on a study that told us how to reroute buses, and we rerouted them and then we were done.
Right.
And, I, of course, will continue to study it.
In the case of BART Metro, I think the cost estimate we have now for what that might entail is hundreds of millions of dollars because it involves, again, changes to a fixed rail system, some of them quite expensive. So I think in that case the rail component is just going to be a different animal than the bus approach.
Thanks, Steve.
Commissioner Haggerty.
Thank you, Ashley, for waking me up. I heard you mention I-580 on, I think it's, Commissioner LaCaro was talking about the item three, or the number three, and what you had said was, is Commissioner LaCaro, and I just want to make sure I heard this correctly, Commissioner LaCaro was trying to find out, were we abandoning the express lane network, and you said no, paraphrasing, of course, but only in 80 and 580, I think is what I heard, paraphrasing. Which leads me, and I think the assumption is that that express lane network would then become somewhat growth-inducing, correct?
You know, Commissioner, maybe I could jump in here.
Well, I'm trying to get somewhere, so.
And look, I think Ashley used a revealing phrase, because I think to some people in the region, the portion of our express lane network that I think the phrase she used is tail end, right? That's the tail end of 580 and 80 as they approach the boundary of the region. Now, of course, they're not the tail end of either road because both are interstate highways, and they keep going. They, you know, 80 goes all the way to New York. So the question that we have heard from various commentators is, should the express lane network focus just on the core of the system and largely on conversion, or should it contemplate the fact that our network eventually is going to plug into somebody else's network? And all we're proposing to do here is to look at the alternative. It's not a suggestion that we endorse that approach. In fact, what's in the plan today is a different approach, and what we're authorized to do is a different approach. But again, under CEQA, you're looking at reasonable alternatives, and I think this is a reasonable alternative, even if you decide eventually you don't want to pursue it.
Well, and I think, Steve, you went where I was going to go, but I just want to understand this, because throughout this process, I've been afraid of a few things. Number one, that we abandon the suburbs. Secondly, I think I'm concerned because a lot of the problems we have, for example, in the Tri-Valley are because of the commute patterns that are coming from San Joaquin and Stanislaus County. So where I was going to go with that is, are you saying that you may study the hot lane network beyond Alameda County's boundaries, or are you saying we're going to build it to our boundary? I'm just trying to figure out what you're saying.
No, I'm not saying the former, because I think we do have to content ourselves with dealing with the Bay Area. But I would not rule out that if we were to, say, proceed with the express lane network, which is in the preferred project, which goes all the way to the boundary of the region, that at some point it will make sense to connect that continuously. Now, there are those who say that that is simply facilitating people commuting from outside the region to in, and we shouldn't do that. But, of course, those people are commuting today anyway. It's not as if they need a hot lane to do it. A hot lane might make it easier, and I'm not sure it's always a bad idea to make things easier for people. But in any event, that's the debate that's swirled around the question. And I think your choice, when you get down to the choice next year of which express lane network to include, I think you ought to think about this question. You know, are we contemplating just a network for the Bay Area, where we sort of take care of our own, or are we thinking of a network that might eventually not just cover the region but span the region into our adjoining neighbors?
Yeah, and I think that this is one of the concerns that I have, is that, you know, we do our regional planning and we stay within the confines of our boundaries, but we don't communicate, you know, with the people on the other side and say, what are you planning, say, for example, with SACOG or something, one of, you know, San Joaquin County or whatever. So I think at some point, you know, I would like to know that there is some sort of dialogue, because air quality, congestion, it doesn't really know a boundary. And where I understand that if we put express lanes through the Altamont corridor down into San Joaquin County, maybe that would facilitate a couple of extra homes, but it would also facilitate probably much cleaner air.
You know, there's an interesting.
I think that's where we have.
There's an interesting example, Commissioner, down in Southern California, where, as you know, I think the first hot lane in the state was on state. What the heck is it, Andy? State Route 91 in Orange County, and it went out to the county boundary with San Bernardino, right, Andy? And the San Bernardino folks were hopping mad about it because they thought this was just the Orange County people charging them to get into their job. Now the San Bernardino County want their own hot lane, and they're building it. So it's again the case of these sort of somewhat artificial, you know, political boundaries getting in the way of some good planning sometimes.
I feel a little better.
Thank you. That's very interesting stuff. We're going to learn a lot from these alternatives and the combinations. I think there's several PhDs could come out of this as well as some great planning in the long run. So are there Commissioner McKenzie, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jake McKenzie, representing Sonoma County and the nine cities thereof. I was interested in the item's input from EIR scoping process, and for the first time in my service as a commissioner from the city of Roanoke Park, I actually received a letter yesterday from one of my citizens right next door. And this, of course, delighted me to think that somebody in Roanoke Park was actually paying attention to what was going on. But the question they were begging is the one that I want to ask, and that is the possibility that over these decades covered by our planning efforts, that, in fact, the growth projections, both of population and job growth, are more of the same that we have been going through or suffering through over the last decade or more, and that, in fact, we may not, during the period of this plan, have more accelerated population and job growth patterns. So as this model, this urban sim, or sorry, not this device of urban sim, will it be being programmed to, say, two different growth projections and population growth projections, job growth projections? I'm curious as to how we're planning to do this over the next 6 months to take into account the distinct possibility that we may not grow as envisioned.
No. Yes and no. There's two different regional growth forecasts being tested. Four of the five alternatives will use the regional growth forecast produced by ABAG that was presented to you as part of the Jobs Housing Connection Strategy.
Right.
Only the one, the alternative four, has a higher housing and job number to really respond to SB 375's requirement about housing. The urban sim model takes those regional growth forecasts as inputs into the model. It does not make variations in any of the forecasts itself as it's going through the simulation process.
So when we come to the end of this, to the certifying the final EIR, we will be looking at a fairly substantial growth changes in the San Francisco Bay over the period covered by the EIR.
Correct. As forecasted by ABAG.
Okay.
What you'll see is the regional growth forecast will be distributed in different ways across the different alternatives.
Yeah. Okay. Another thing that was brought up was CEQA streamlining, and is it the opinion of our legal counsel that what we are proposing is consonant with the statute? I think the statute was fairly clear that there are some, if certain conditions are met in transit areas, that in fact the exemption is set out in law, and then there are other circumstances where the exemptions may be partial. And is our legal staff comfortable with the direction in which we're going?
Tina Thomas, yes, very much so. The exemption is one way to streamline. The other way to streamline is with what's called a sustainable communities environmental assessment. I think that's the most likely tool that will be used. We definitely have that in mind as we work through the alternatives in the EIR.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And? Thank you. Commissioner Green.
I mean, I'm fine with going forward with all five of these, though I agree with Mark Luce that at some point some of these are going to be just deemed, as I said before, another, like, lowering the speed limit to 55. I won't be going that direction either, but there will be many of these things that aren't going to be flying too far off the ground with me. But I do think that we all of us need to just recognize right now that we're going to be coming up with what I would call alternative number six, which will be a weaving probably the best elements of all these other five together into a, sort of an amalgamation at some point. So I think we should all just realize that's probably going to be happening. I'm just wanting to bring up, I know other commissioners have had a chance, but our Alameda County Transportation Commission did send off a letter earlier this week, and I'm just wondering if I know if Ashley had a chance to look at it, but just for anybody who hasn't looked at it yet, some of the things that we're concerned about in addition to what's in front of us are you know, having a level of service included in here at some point. You know, we can go through all kinds of different studies, but if we're all ending up at level F, then I don't think anybody's going to be too excited by anything. And also, we talk about streamlining CEQA for residential uses, but I think at some point that needs to be looked at for non-residential uses also, meaning if you're really wanting to get jobs in places, you're going to have to start doing something more than just talking about how great it is to have jobs in your community. And I mentioned this the other day in the same room on one of the alternatives, not to pick on anybody, Mr. Campos, but, I always like the zeroing out the in-commute part. And as I, you talk about feasibility and things like that, is that, again, I think in some idea of reality or feasibility, not hallucinating, is, when we're going to be living in a cocoon here at some point that, there is going to be some in-commuting. That's just going to be the way life continues. So I think that some of that has to be tempered, where, again, as I always bring up, the extreme example going from Cloverdale to Gilroy is not an in-commute in the Bay, but in the Bay Area region, because it's all in the nine Bay Areas, but counties, but going from Dixon to Davis, so, oh, you've crossed the line there. Bad boy, bad girl. And also in our county, and I'll give some credit to my friends to my left here. One of the things we are somewhat interested in is at least that San Francisco has an automobile trips generated study, which we recognize the validity of that to some degree, and we think that actually that would be worthwhile for all communities probably around the Bay Area to look at how developers would be paying a fair share toward a project's impact. We also think, at least in our county, that a regional carbon credit bank might be worth looking at. So I'm just wondering if you've had a chance to look at any of those comments that came through, but I think at some point we need to be factoring in these during this upcoming 9-month process in front of us.
Commissioner, we did receive literally hundreds of written comments via of course. We are sorting through all the comments that received. The close of comment was just 2 days ago, July 11th, and our intention is to go through each of those comments and really think through them as we actually go into the process of preparing the EIR. So we certainly will take all the comments under consideration.
Mr. Joya.
Couple things. First, I appreciate that staff has presented this also in a way which makes it easy for the public to see the pieces. And I think that's the idea of this presentation, I think, is very good. And I think it's important to note that all the different alternatives really came out of the discussions we've had here in our past meetings with input from a number of the organizations and advocates who've appeared before us. So I'm pleased that we're going to go ahead and study these alternatives. I realize that the preferred alternative sort of gets greater analysis. I want to understand that issue, because to the extent that we may, as Mark says, pick different pieces out of them, and I think we should keep an open mind about some of these different alternatives. But as to the extent we pick different pieces, if the analysis is less thorough on some of the alternatives, how does that impact our ability to sort of pull from that into a preferred, whatever the ultimate scenario is?
I think that there will be a slightly lesser degree of analysis on the alternatives, but it's going to be sufficient enough so that you as commissioners can pick and choose. We're just going to have to do that. And then, like I said, we'll pause, we'll go back, we'll look at the alternative pieces that you've selected, make sure that the EIR covers those, and fashion the findings accordingly.
Thank you. Commissioner Luce.
Yeah, I just perhaps want to note that we're talking about building new construction and transit investment, but I think some of the solutions are going to be somewhere else, giving assistance to workers to actually buy homes closer to where they work, and some other programs that we're testing and successfully in Napa are probably where the real answer is. We're dealing with the fringes here. What we need is a whole change in attitude of the entire population, not just those who are going to be moving into new construction. And I realize it's relevant because it deals with the SB 375 issue of greenhouse gases. It perhaps could be part of this, but I understand they've got enough to handle just looking at the transit and new construction issues. So I suppose that's more of a comment than a question.
Thank you. Commissioner McKenzie.
I was intrigued by, Jake McKenzie, Sonoma County. I was intrigued by the prospect that Commissioner Green raises that there'll be a number six, which will be getting the jigsaw puzzle pieces and fitting them together in a completely different format at the end of the day. And will there be an opportunity or would there be any benefit then to having that run through this urban SIM process? Would that have to be done to give it validity for us to adopt such a alternative number six?
Certainly. We'll do whatever analysis it takes to kind of explain the alternative and make sure that it's adequately covered in the EIR.
And then maybe I've missed a meeting or maybe I've not been paying attention in class, but have we been briefed on urban SIM, or are we all supposed to know about urban SIM?
I'll be happy to take all of you into a classroom and brief you on urban SIM. Actually, Paul Waddell, the creator of urban SIM, will be happy to do that.
I would just suggest, Madam Chair, at some time, Madam Chair of our commission, that if urban SIM is going to be used while we're going through this magnificent piece of mechanics that we're embarking on, that it would behoove us all to be familiar with what it's up to. So thank you.
We'll
thank
set you. It up.
Yeah, I think you have introduced it before to us, but all of us would probably appreciate understanding it in greater detail.
Okay.
So I think it would be great. Thank you. Are there any further comments from the commission? Many of the children of people here probably understand it better than we do, but we will look forward to learning more. So I guess we're ready to move. Oh, Commissioner Campos.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies. I do want to follow up on the comments about making sure that there is as much of an analysis of the different alternatives as we can. I think that we'll be better served if that happens. And I'm just wondering alternative five, the extent to which we are confident that the modeling that will be used will give us all the information that will be needed.
I mean, as staff, we feel pretty confident that the integrated modeling system that we get will get results across the board equally for all the alternatives.
And I know with five especially, there was a lot of involvement by advocates and different community stakeholders, and I'm wondering the extent to which there will be some continued interaction with them as you're modeling the alternative.
Yes, very much so.
Okay. Well, I just want to take this opportunity to thank staff. I think it's great work, and I think the way which it was presented is really easy to understand, and I appreciate the fact that there will be ongoing communications with the different people who have been involved. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
One last comment. I guess I'm a skeptic. I'm not sure that you can plug in a model that we really don't understand and just believe that the results are going to be real. And doable. And I don't think you're going to really develop realistic alternatives in just the next few months as for all these different scenarios. So I think that's fine, but I think we really need to go in with our eyes open and really scrutinize what it is we're doing and asking ourselves, does this really make sense? Is this politically viable? And then hopefully with all the different pieces of information, we can arrive at something that we believe really will work. And I agree with the earlier comments. We need a plan that works and that we all can get behind and move forward with.
Thank you. Reasonable skepticism, but I think we have a motion. We're ready for a motion.
Oh, Madam Chair, I would move that this Plan Berea Environmental Impact Report scoping feedback and alternatives be moved forward to MTC Commission for their approval.
There's a second, and this is the MTC motion, so I assume there'll be a separate one from ABAG. Is there any objection from MTC? Hearing none, I assume we have approved.
Then I will
recommending approval.
I will entertain a similar motion from our
so moved.
Administrator committee. I have a motion and a second. Any opposition? Seeing none, that passes unanimously.
Thank you very much. And on that, I think we are prepared to adjourn this meeting. Thank you. Nice.